Hit it. Welcome into the BBP2 in our second Inquirer Bengals podcast of the week. Every Thursday during the season, we'll bring you more specific game preview insight from players and your Cincinnati.com beat writers. But that's only the beginning. Every week, we'll bring you Paul Dougherty's hot seat with our guest on Beyond the Stripes, our advanced analytics conversation with the team at Pro Football Focus, as well as a Throwback Thursday interview with a voice from Bengals past. All right, let's go. All right, welcome to the latest edition of the BBP2. Deuce is here.
Yeah.
And we've got Bengals at the Ravens this week. First of all, happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Happy Thanksgiving to you, Jim.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving.
Do you have big plans?
Plans to get fat.
Plans to get fat.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you eat? Like, what do you go for? Where do you start?
Sweet potatoes.
And
sweet potatoes and homemade cranberry sauce.
Really?
Yeah, with the orange, the real tart cranberries with the orange shavings.
We would be perfect to have Thanksgiving together because I don't want any of those. Like, if I saw a whole table, those would be the last two things I would have interested in.
Yeah, I take a little bit of turkey, a little bit of stuffing, mashed potatoes, sweet potatoes, cranberry sauce.
We'd fight over the mashed
green beans.
We'd fight over the mashed potatoes because I love the mashed potatoes. I am notorious for stuffing.
I'm not a stuffing guy.
I will go, and sometimes there's 7, 8, 9 people at our Thanksgiving table. There will be one bowl of stuffing for me and one for everyone else. Literally, that is how it is made, knowing that this is what I need.
Yeah.
I used to eat, you know how you have the stuffing that you just like put in the microwave or whatever with butter, you can do stovetop type stuff. Well, I would eat before you put it in, just the crumbles, like croutons, like chips.
Yeah.
I would just eat like a whole box of that stuff. These were some dark days.
Yeah.
But I mean, I just love the taste of it. I've kind of come out of that phase a little bit, but Thanksgiving is the one day I sort of go back to those roots. We need to do Thanksgiving together then at some point. We are a great match.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I do. As we said on Beyond the Stripes on Tuesday with Brandon LaFell, I am a sides guy, so.
Yes.
But yeah, I do like all of those. I have a sweet tooth though,
you do.
So it's it should be no surprise, I guess, that sweet potatoes,
yes,
brown sugar.
Well, happy Thanksgiving to all of our BBP listeners. I hope you all are hanging out with your family. We you'll be watching some football, and also maybe you're still watching the Bengals on Sunday. Those of you that have not given up,
it's playoff football, Paul. Come on,
it is playoff mode, which is not normally a good thing for this team.
No,
playoff mode tends to be a bad thing, but they're technically moving into it. I want to let you know real quick what we got coming up. Here in the BBP later on, we're of course going to have our Pro Football Focus conversation this week. We talked about the loss of A.J. Green and Baltimore's defense and why they've been so much better, particularly their improvement up the middle and safety Eric Weddle, who's currently the number one ranked safety in Pro Football Focus. We have the hot seat with Brandon LaFell.
Really good.
It was good. Brandon was a great guest.
Yeah, he was.
If you have time this weekend, I encourage you to go and either watch the whole show, which was a good show, or just you can listen in later on the hot seat. Really good. And then a treat, we kind of just, when we come across something really good, whether it's an interview in the locker room or whether it is a Throwback Thursday type of thing, like to bring it to you. Well, this one's going to be one we didn't really see coming. We had Steve Smith Sr.
Yeah.
On the conference call, the media conference call this week, and he was incredible and hilarious.
Yeah.
And he's already gone viral as you listen to this, some of the stuff that he said, but the whole thing was just great, and there was some Bengal elements to it. So if you only want to get Bengals news, but if you just want straight entertainment, you'll love. So we're going to bring you the entire conference call that we had with Steve Smith this week. I highly recommend that. All right, let's get to some of the issues of the week. The biggest news that has come out of this week as the Bengals get ready for the game is they made the decision that we've been kind of speculating all year on between William Jackson III and Cedric Pierman, the two guys that were up to possibly come back off of IR designated return. They went with Cedric Pierman. really, it all changed this week.
Yes.
It all changed when Giovanni Bernard went down, and suddenly it went from WJ3 is the guy.
Right.
To, well, now we need a running back, and you can get the special teams help at the same time that Cedric. It really was a decision, wasn't it, about 2016 versus beyond.
And, without a doubt.
And that's what it was, and it was this. And this team, if you expect this team to wave the white flag, they're just not going to.
No, and it actually, it kind of syncs up with the decision and the thing we talked about in the first BVP, Paul, with keeping Mike Nugent. You know, no change for the sake of change, and I kind of threw it out there of, like, if you need a guy to win, you know, a 45-yard field goal in Week 17 to beat Baltimore to go to playoffs, they want Mike Nugent. Well, this is the same thing. I mean, William Jackson III, we have tweeted it and written about it. I mean, he was the guy to return, and then, you know, Marvin kind of took a deep breath on Wednesday. And was like, it was a tough decision because they, look, you pay corners a lot of money. You down the line, you know, they're spending a lot of money on a first-round draft pick. Drake Kirkpatrick may leave. William Jackson III may be your starting outside corner next year. So, but you're right, Paul, it was the idea of how do we fill that roster spot? Do you promote a rookie in Trey Carson? Or, again, sign someone you don't know who they are, who doesn't know the offense, who doesn't know anything. Whereas Cedric Pierman, I'm sure, look, on 3rd and 8, if Rex Burkhead pulls a hamstring because he's playing for the first time all year, who do you trust? Trey Carson or some guy off the street to pick up a blitz, to pick up Terrell Suggs? Right. You know what I mean? So you're right. It was a decision made for Sunday and for what they think is going to be a push for the division.
What they have to think that.
You're right, they do.
You know, and if this injury to Gio had happened on this Sunday's game in a loss to Baltimore,
right,
and suddenly, then I think the decision is different.
Right, I agree.
I would think if that was the case, I think they would go with William Jackson III and try to get him some of those valuable rookie snaps to get him going and get a view of him.
Right.
But it didn't. Right. And this is, if you can argue, if this team has any hope of turning this thing around, it has to start Sunday.
Yeah.
And if they did win a game, there is suddenly some hope for this
team.
There
is.
I mean, and so while everyone wants to go out there and throw out, they should just tank for draft picks, right?
Right.
I mean, the amount of times I've heard the word tank this week is astounding. It
makes you think we're covering an NBA team.
I know, this is Sixers.
Doesn't work that way.
It doesn't. And good luck walking in that locker room and telling 53 guys, we're not really doing all we can to try to win this week.
Right.
That does not work here.
No.
It just doesn't. And this team isn't in a tank rebuild situation.
No. They thought Super Bowl. So they're in a... look, Cleveland's in tank. Look, Cleveland's doing something very unprecedented in the NFL. So, first of all, if Bengals fans are looking up to Cleveland and saying, this is what we should do.
Be like the Browns.
Yeah. First of all, that's amazing. It seems like a short memory from the 90s, Paul, early 2000s, first of all. It doesn't happen in the NFL, and you're right. It's for a team that came in thinking we can go to the Super Bowl to being 3-6-1, that, I mean, there's just a range of mental gymnastics going on in there. You're right, for Marvin Lewis to roll in and you know, call it a year with 6 games left.
Yeah, and that is the message that would be sent. I think the players aren't dumb.
No.
They know exactly what you get out of Cedric Pierman and what you get out of William Jackson III, and it does send a message to these guys that we're giving up on you.
Right.
If you bring back William Jackson, because here's the thing. Yeah, you want him to go play, and I, you know, got people love to go back on me on this, and I've been kind of saying the reasons why. What are you really going to get out of William Jackson III? Darqueze Dennard can't even get snaps right now, and he's a. They really need to know about him. They have to make a contract decision on him after this season.
Right.
And that guy has not played a bit. And everyone says, "Yeah, well, he hasn't played because he sucks." How do you know he sucks?
Right.
Show me, like, the string of time he's gotten to go prove himself.
Right.
To actually go play snaps. He hasn't had that. And this is the closest thing he's going to have to an opportunity to go do that. And then they have to decide whether to exercise a possibly $8 million fifth-year option on a guy.
Right.
But you're going to bring in a rookie who actually does have 4 years ahead of him and play him ahead of Darqueze Dennard? I mean, it's just, to me, I don't know. The point is, I don't know where his snaps are coming. Like where he's going to come and have this huge impact, where you're going to really learn a lot about whether he can play corner or not. Over the last six games of the season, there was some valuable role playing to be had, and they love doing that with in the way that they deal with these first round picks. Even with Cedric Obwehi last year, they created these big jumbo packages that they started using him in and finding ways to fit him in to get him his feet wet, so that when he came out this year, he'd play better. Maybe they should revisit that strategy because it didn't really work this year. But you know what I'm saying, where they just want guys to get their feet wet. And, I just don't know where necessarily that was even going to happen in comparison to what you're going to get from Cedric.
Yeah, you know, Dre Kirkpatrick's kind of on the fence about playing this week. So, you know, maybe if it would have been this week and Dre decides he can't go, and he did kind of say Wednesday, Paul, it's up to him if he feels good. You know, Quez starts, Josh Shaw's your nickel. Well, Baltimore is not really going five wide. I mean, you know, so, and look, in a game you need to win, are you going to have your rookie on Steve Smith Sr.?
He's got like three practices under his belt.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, put it this way too, Paul, Cedric Pierman can play Sunday. William Jackson III was likely going to have to get his 3 weeks of practice that the Bengals were allowed under the exemption just to be active. So even the idea that, like, William would be ready to play is kind of ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say absurd, but it's kind of ridiculous.
It is. It is.
To have assumed. I mean, you're at best thinking maybe this kid would have been ready for Pittsburgh in week 16. I mean, it. Look, I get it. Fans are frustrated, and they're fans, and it's, you know. But you're right, Paul. It came. Giovanni Bernard changed the climate.
Yep.
And Cedric Pierman is kind of the double-edged sword, where you get your third running back. So now you're protected for injury at that spot, and you got a guy who can cover on special teams and help
Pro Bowl
out.
Level.
Right.
Yeah. So that's where that is, and no one's tanking or waving the white flag. Perhaps they should. We don't have any hope that they're actually going to do anything, but players and coaches cannot take. I mean, you just can't. You want to take a. You want to pull the culture back to the 90s in a hurry?
Right.
Start waving the white flag 10 games into a season when you're a game and a half out of first place, regardless of how poor you have played. Or look, if you're the Browns and you're 0-11, but the other teams in the division are all 3-8.
Yeah.
You can't wave the white flag
if
you want to create a culture of caring and winning and competitiveness and all that stuff. Let's talk about this Baltimore game that they're probably going to lose. The matchups, this is the second week in a row that we talk about the matchups, and they don't set up well. You know, when you talk about, okay, you don't have A.J. Green, you don't have Giovanni Bernard, you're reworking this offense on the fly against the second-ranked team in football. I just don't know where the points come from. I don't know where the points come from.
Yeah, I don't see points. I'm a little. I don't know. It's like some guy Marvin has said this. I think I know. You know, you can kind of make numbers look how you want. Paul, I mean, look, the Ravens have played the Browns twice, the Jets. You know, Washington back, and you know your Jags.
Ooh.
Look, I'm not doubt. Look, there's 10 games in. Yeah, they got the number two defense. They still gave up 400 yards to offense to the Ravens. Dallas and Dak Prescott's throwing the ball all over the field.
Mm-hmm.
They're good. I can't get off my thought that they're
trash
as a team.
As a team, because their offense is so good.
Yeah, they're 5-5 because they played the Browns. You know what I mean? But you're right though, Paul. I think that shows where the Bengals are right now though.
Because
I can't. I can't pick the Bengals to win.
You can't.
Not without A.J. and Giovanni Bernard. Honestly, if those two are healthy, I do pick the Bengals to win.
Really? Yeah.
Because I do think A.J. Green is that good and would beat those guys.
Yeah.
I just don't think... Because it's not just those two guys, Paul. Look, Wednesday, Brandon LaFell didn't practice with a knee. He should be ready to go Sunday, but he's hurt. C.J. Uzama's been hurt for a few weeks with a calf. And why does that matter? Well, C.J. Uzama was your starting tight end through 6 weeks. Well, if you're trying to figure out offense, figure out matchups on your end, what's a better way to attack a bunch of old linebackers than with Tyler Eifert, a healthy C.J. Uzama, and a healthy Tyler Croft?
Mm-hmm.
Well, now if you take one of those guys away, we don't know if Tyler Croft can catch
mm-hmm.
or get open. You know what I mean? So I just Ken's really limited. If especially, you know, Andy's got this shoulder on the injury report again, Paul. Look, he some of those balls didn't look good against Buffalo.
Yeah, you wonder how much the shoulder right? played into it. Yep, it's a good point. I don't think that Andy is significantly hurt, but it does make you think twice at a couple of passes that didn't look
right
the way you expected them to look, and we'll see what happens here. Maybe some Bengals fans will get their wish. Maybe they'll see Jim McCarron. Everyone calling for the backup.
You want to talk about some woes?
Woes. There's some woes happening there then.
Number five's a really good dude. I like him, but
he's not 14.
No.
So prediction?
Kind of like I said, 14-10 Ravens. I think statistically this might be one of the best days that the Bengals defense puts up since Miami.
Mm-hmm.
But they're prone to mental errors once or twice a game. And they always have led to touchdowns, whether it's the opening drive of a game, opening drive of a half, or a stretch where, you know, there's a couple dumb penalties on third down or a missed assignment. Mm-hmm. It's happened every week. And I just
how about the opening drive thing? It's amazing.
It's so strange.
It is amazing. We're talking 6 of the last 7 games of points, 5 of the last 7 games they've led a touchdown, and usually that touchdown has looked so easy.
Yes.
It has just been a carving
80
up.
Yards on the field, 8 no plays.
No problem at all.
Right.
I mean, it's unbelievable.
So while I have no, like, Joe Flacco's bad and Steve Smith is old and slow and Mike Wallace can only do like a couple things, Dennis Pitta's still good. This team can't cover tight end still. I think it's 14-10 Ravens, and I think they do get a couple of those. Like, we look good for 12 plays total.
Mm-hmm.
But and defensively, Paul, I'm not a huge believer in this Ravens being like they're totally phenomenal defense. I just don't think the Bengals have enough offensively.
Yeah, I don't know where the points come from. I have 13-7. Very similar style to you. And I think that, yet again, they'll have like 4 drives in the fourth quarter where if any of them lead to points, that they would win the game. And they end up losing by 1 score.
You know what Marvin would really love?
What's that?
If, like, Cedric Pierman forces a fumble.
Yes.
They flip that to a tutty. Yeah. And Nuge hits like a 48-yarder to win.
Just the Marvin validation game?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then it sparks this team going on a 6-0 run.
Right.
To close
Honestly,
this.
Paul, right? I think something like that's got to happen.
Yeah, no,
this defense hasn't scored a touchdown.
Don't you want... Do you kind of wonder what would happen to just momentum with this team if they could just win a game?
Yeah.
Like, let's just go into hypothetical dream world here. That they just blow out the Ravens. Like, they just go down there and something happens, and clearly A.J. Green and Giovanni Bernard were the two holding this team back.
Yeah, right.
Right. And they just roll, and the defense is dominant, and they win 31-3.
Yeah.
Do you kind of wonder how the momentum and feel of this entire season could change just with one? Suddenly people would just be forgetting how bad this team has been. A, this is crazy talk. I don't think it's going to happen. But just hypothetically, as a coach, you have to think of it this way. If we could just go get that one win and just get this ball rolling, maybe the momentum can carry over into what will continue to be a bunch of winnable games.
And the reason I would agree with that, Paul, is for the same reason I was probably one of the last holdouts thinking this team was going to put something together. Mm-hmm. Because you'd get... That to me, that scenario means a totally dominant defensive game. 3-4 turnovers, maybe a score, maybe Alex Erickson pops off another 65-yarder, actually takes one of the house. You sort of get all of the things that have not happened or only happened in spurts in one game, which, again, I think is totally possible. So now you're 4-6. a game out of the division. I think Pittsburgh's going to win Thanksgiving, you know, against Indianapolis. You're looking ahead. So now it's like rookie QB on the road with Carson Wentz. Winnable game. You got the Browns. Mm-hmm. Again, all of a sudden, you're right. You're thinking you're 6-6.
Right.
And who knows?
Eventually come down to Steelers and the Ravens game at the end of the season.
At home.
Yeah.
Both. So you're right, Paul. And I think this defense in particular, it's a group I think that really would respond because it would be the ascending, right? It'd be mm-hmm. the third week in a row mm-hmm. of better defensive play and a group that, you know, is the healthy side.
Yeah.
You know, and has the type of look defensively to me, I think is one of those things where if you do, you can like, I think trying harder, if that makes sense, or feeling enraged or feeling motivated helps you bet more. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think offense is like baseball. You can't like try harder in baseball.
No. Yeah.
It screws you up.
Yeah. You just need to be good.
Where I think defense, there's a different animal with that. So I guess you got to leave that hope just because the Ravens are so bad offensively, Paul, yeah. that maybe, you know,
yeah.
that fumble in New York, the fumble against Buffalo get picked up.
Yep.
You know, Adam doesn't drop the interception.
Mm-hmm. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
So, but if they lose Sunday, it's over. It is over because yeah. it's 2.5 games.
Right.
With 5 left.
Right.
And it just ain't gonna it ain't gonna happen. All right. So, we'll wrap this up again. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody. We will be in Baltimore, so make sure you keep checking out cincinnati.com. Pick up your Bengals app and have all the news for you from everything going on down there. Coming up, Pro Football Focus, myself, Steve Palazzolo, talking about fall off of A.J. Green and Eric Weddle and that Baltimore defense and where the strengths and weaknesses are there. The hot seat with Brandon LaFell, where he asks the greatest – he has the greatest response ever to Doc's weekly question
yeah.
of – do you have any questions for me? So stick around to the end, or just scroll to the end if you want that one.
Yeah, it's worth it.
It's worth it. And then the entire conference call with Steve Smith Sr. So sit back and enjoy the entertainment on that one. And anyway, that all is coming right at you. Thank you for listening to The Deuce. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody. And we will talk to you on Tuesday. All right, welcome back to Bengals in Focus with Pro Football Focus. I'm Paul Gaynor Jr., Bengals beat writer for the Cincinnati Inquirer and Cincinnati.com. Here with Steve Palazzolo, lead analyst for PFF down here on Main Street and over the Rhine, as we take a look into the Bengals and the Ravens this weekend. And, you know, the Bengals facing a new set of issues now without A.J. Green and Giovanni Bernard. But in particular, when you're talking about A.J. Green and Baltimore, he has just been ruining them over the years. Yeah. We saw John Harbaugh last year said, one of these years we're going to learn to cover A.J. Green. Well, good luck on their part. They don't have to cover him this week. But for the Bengals, how does their offense change? Obviously, incredibly. But with the when you look at the numbers, where are the biggest fall-off areas that they're going to have to figure out when it comes to Green being gone and looking to other targets?
Yeah, so obviously Green, outstanding this year. He's always been good, pretty much taking his game to a new level this year, one of the best receivers in the entire league from a grade perspective. I think the first thing is down the field. He's one of the best deep threats in the league, a guy that we've seen him catching the Hail Mary, catching one-handed passes, so that downfield contested catch, Andy Dalton won't be able, you know, won't have as many opportunities there with guys like Brandon LaFell or Tyler Boyd. So those guys need to step up, I think, at the short and intermediate level to make up for what Green was doing. But, yeah, I mean, everybody's going to have to step up. Tyler Eifert's going to have to play better. So going to be a team effort to replace a guy like Green's production.
You guys, you love the yards per route run stat, which I do as well. And you know, you look A.J. Green up there again. He's all up there every year. But, you know, it's almost a full yard-plus drop when you get down to Tyler Boyd, Brandon LaFell. A lot of that has to do with A.J. Green soaking up a lot of targets. So we'll see how those numbers change. But you can see the efficiency is just nowhere near where you get with a guy like Green.
Right, because, you know, the thing about Green, the reason why he's up there in that metric, and the metric is really good because you look at that, the top receiver in the league always rank high in it. And it's because they can win, and guys like Green can win at every level. They can give him a short pass, let him create after the catch. We talked about the downfield throws. He creates so well at the intermediate level, dig routes, deep outs. So Green can win everywhere, whereas I think the Bengals might have to tap into specific skill sets of Tyler Boyd, specific skill sets of Brandon LaFell, and hope that Eifert can really get open up the seam.
So Bengals fans will remember the last couple trips, really, we've seen them make to Baltimore. A.J. Green going over the top and safeties looking confused for Baltimore and falling all over the place. The Ravens look like they may have fixed some of that. They rank near the top of the league in most defensive categories. They're one of the top two teams overall, obviously number one against the run. It goes to up the middle, doesn't it? Why their defense has suddenly been so much better. Those lost safeties back there falling over themselves hasn't happened as much anymore.
That's been the biggest key, I think, for the Baltimore defense, that strength up the middle. It starts with Eric Weddle. They picked him up from San Diego in the offseason. He's getting up there in age, but still playing at a high level. Right now, our number one ranked safety. And it's because he does it in the run game. He does it in coverage. He's a guy that can line up in the box, work downhill in the run game, can also play center field. So he brings a lot of versatility to that defense. Ladarius Webb moving from corner to safety. He's brought a lot of range in the back end as well, playing extremely well. And C.J. Mosley, linebacker in the middle. He's always been solid, but he's really upped his game, especially compared to last season. So that strength up the middle has been huge for Baltimore.
You know, just looking last year, this year, in some of your grades, you talk about Eric Weddle won, and then obviously Darius Webb, 31st ranked. Well, last year they were playing with Will Hill and with Kendrick Lewis, ranked 13th and 59th. I mean, you can just see right there the drop-off, and the same type of thing now with Zach Orr playing next to C.J. Mosley. Mosley has become a top 10 linebacker for you guys, whereas last year Darryl Smith, you saw, who started to really hit the wall on the back end. Yeah, it happened on the back end of his career, but they got younger there, and they've really, the whole thing has helped them to get better. So that's really the biggest difference in the Bengals go to play the Ravens. So you look inside the numbers, up the middle is where the difference is in that Baltimore Ravens defense, and we'll see how A.J. Green, with it, how the Bengals can do without A.J. Green, and they can find some other guys to make some of those plays. So Main Street, over the Rhine, PFF, Paul Danner Jr. and Steve Palazzolo. We'll talk to you later. All right, welcome back to Beyond the Stripes, by JoeSpaldo.com. We are here at the Hoffer House in Newport. It's time for the hot seat, Doc. You are up.
Thank you. You want some pretzels, man?
No, I got to watch my weight.
You got to watch your weight.
Yeah, I got to weigh in Friday, and my cheat day is going to be Thursday this week.
All right. Brandon Josiah LaFell. Mm-hmm. You prefer Joe.
Yep.
Josiah.
Yes.
Does anybody besides dumb media people call you Brandon?
All they get called Brandon on the first day of school. And then I tell the teachers I like to be called Joe.
And that was it.
That was it. I never been called. If you go back to my hometown, though, nobody called me Brandon.
Yeah.
Nobody.
Do you know who the original Josiah was?
He was a king at 8 years old.
He was a king of Judah and the house of David.
Yep.
And he ruled for 31 years around 600 B.C.
Yep.
I only know that because I looked it up.
Yeah, my pastor tells me that every time I go home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How about that? Now, I looked at your Instagram page, and you seem to be a man of diverse interests, right? Let's talk about a few. There were several pictures of food. Are you a food guy?
Yeah, I think I'm a foodie. You know, when I go to different cities, I like to look up the top food places and go check it out.
Now, you're from Houston, so I'm guessing lots of seafood.
Lots of seafood. We got a place called the Breakfast Club. Their chicken and waffles are probably the best I ever had.
That's not seafood.
Yeah, but I'm just saying that's
chicken of the sea, maybe tuna.
Oh man,
chicken and waffles. You had a picture of chicken and waffles on your Instagram.
Yeah, it's a great spot. But it's Papa Do's is one of the good. They got a Papa Do's up
here. That's a chain. Yeah.
Yeah, that's good seafood. We eat in Houston a lot.
Papa Do's good.
Yeah, it's real good.
Because normally a chain, you know, sometimes you wonder.
Papa Do's.
But you recommend
good.
Papa Do's.
I recommend it.
I'll have to check that out. What about you? So you like Cajun food?
Yeah.
Soul food?
Definitely like soul food.
What's your best? What's your favorite?
My mom makes some banging smothered pork chops, rice and gravy, cornbread and corn.
Wow.
It's banging.
Can I come over?
No.
No.
That's the
You
right
also
answer.
Have on your Instagram pictures of President Obama and Muhammad Ali. What did each of those men teach you, if anything?
Man, both of those guys, they kind of did things their own way. They was great leaders in their own way. Muhammad Ali, you know, he gave you that voice. You know, you speak up. Be proud of yourself. Don't let nobody intimidate you. Speak up.
Right.
If you feel like this right, then fight for it. And then Obama, man, first black president, man, you know, growing up in this world, you know, my kid, to let him know that our first president It's black.
It's possible.
It's all, yeah, it's possible. Anything is possible.
Who are your heroes?
Well, Michael Jordan.
Michael Jordan's your hero?
Michael Jordan and my mom.
And your mom. Why?
My mom, she raised me and my four brothers, me and my three brothers by herself. She was a strong woman, had two jobs. She didn't complain.
Yeah.
We didn't have a lot, but we had enough. And Michael Jordan, man, who didn't want to be like Mike? I almost gave up football trying to be like Mike.
You almost gave up football trying to be like Mike, really?
Like, yeah, I didn't play football my freshman year of high school. I gave it up.
When did you realize that you probably would never be like Mike?
Never.
Never? You kept striving?
I kept.
Do you feel as if you made the right decision, though, in not being like Mike?
I definitely did.
I'd say so. You got two rings and a bunch of money. Right?
Hey, man, the way they playing these basketball players, I probably could have had a lot more money.
Right? You got a bunch of hats. I read that, too.
I love hats.
What's your favorite hat?
My favorite hat probably got to be black hat, Chicago Bulls. My black hat with the red brim.
Okay.
My Chicago Bulls hat, because I'm a big-time Bulls fan, you know, growing up, watching Jordan.
Right.
I love the Bulls, so
yeah,
that's probably my favorite hat.
Do you know that when I was a Cub reporter, I interviewed Michael Jordan at North Carolina? He was 10 minutes late for the interview, and he says, "I'm sorry for being late, sir." You think that would happen to me now?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah, you're still probably the same guy on the inside, man.
Well, that'd be great. I say, all right, Michael, just don't do it again. Now, you just turned 30, right?
Yes.
How'd that hit you?
For like a regular day. I woke up and I had practice the next day, so it was a regular day in life.
I mean, some people feel like their lives are going to be wrecked. Like, when Lindsay turns 30, like 15 years from now, it's going to be tragic for her. But it didn't have any...
Nah, it was
no big deal.
Regular day.
What would you like to achieve before you're 40?
Before I'm 40?
Yeah, the next 10 years.
I'd like to give me another Super Bowl.
Yeah.
There you go.
I'd like to be coaching my son wherever he's doing, whatever he's playing, football, basketball, baseball. I'd like to be coaching my son and retired, not fat.
You keep eating that soul food, you're going to have trouble with that.
Yeah, not fat and just enjoying life.
Do you still wear your LSU shoulder pads?
Yes.
Why? You're a Cincinnati Bengal, a New England Patriot, a Carolina Panther, you all these years, LSU pads.
That's my comfort zone.
Really?
My shoulder pads, they held up this long without any injuries to my body, so
yeah.
Hey, that's what I'm going to war with every week.
They still work. They're still together. Do you ever have anybody do surgery on them to fix them up?
Yeah, I had to get some surgery done on them when I first got to New England. I guess when they got up there, man, they was falling apart. The guys were joking at me. I was like, hey, this one I'm wearing. Well, yeah. y'all got to find a way to fix them up because I'm not wearing nothing else but these.
How about
that? They found a way.
Now, your Twitter feed contains a horoscope almost every day. Are you a big horoscope guy?
Nah, I just don't know how to take it off. I started. I don't know how to take it off.
It's a new
so I'm just, it's just up there.
Scorpio.
Yeah, I'm a Scorpio.
I was going to ask you all these deep questions about what being a Scorpio meant, but you really don't care, do you?
It's been on there for like a year and a half, man. I get up every morning and I look at it. I'm like,
there it
man,
is.
I'm,
you ever read it?
No. I'm trying to find out, take it off.
Why do you call yourself Jody Breeze on Twitter?
Oh, man, because my name is JoJo. So
correct.
Everybody in college, one of my good friends, Tyson Jackson, who played for the Atlanta Falcons, he just started calling me Jody Breeze out the blue in college. And every young guy that came in heard him say it, so they started calling me it. So it was just something that stuck with me.
Okay, all right. Which ring means more to you, the Super Bowl ring or the college ring?
My college.
I figured you'd say that. Why?
Because it was those guys I won that national championship with, those are like brothers. Those are the guys that I still call today, joke around with. Whenever I got free time in the offseason, those are the guys I hang with. Those are the guys I roommates, woke up, ate breakfast, went to class with, ate lunch with, lift weights with, practiced. I was with those guys almost 15 hours out of the day.
Yeah.
Those are like brothers. And winning the Super Bowl is special, but winning a national championship with people that you consider family,
yeah,
that's It's priceless.
It was more fun too, I guess. Now it's a business, and you do.
Yeah, it was
what you
way more fun. It was way more fun at college.
Yeah. Okay. Do you have to have something beyond really good talent to succeed with Bill Belichick?
Say it one more time.
Do you have to be more than just a really good player to be able to play for him?
You gotta be strong mentally, because with Bill, his system is so hard to learn, and Bill is so demanding, and Bill plays so many mind games with you that it'll kind of freak you out if you're not mentally strong, because you might come out there one week and you might catch 10 balls. Yeah. And you might think, this is my spot for the rest of the year. But you might be splitting time with a guy that's on the practice squad that you like, is they thinking about pulling him up? Or what is going on? But you got to be mentally strong, because Bill never lets you feel like you're comfortable and you can chill out because you made it.
Yeah.
He's going to have you on your heels, got you working and busting your tail and learning 10 to 20 plays, new plays every week.
Really? Wow. What was your take on Deflategate?
It didn't happen, man.
It didn't happen.
No.
It didn't happen.
It if you look at the score of that game, even if they so-called got the ball out, what was the results? It wasn't a close game.
It was not.
We beat them twice that year in blowouts. Yeah. It wasn't close. You can complain all you want, but after they took the ball out, it didn't help y'all.
Yeah. Didn't help. No advantage whatsoever.
No, and at the end of the day, I think what was the score? 45-7?
I don't know, man.
LeGarrette Blount ran for 3 touchdowns, so we just would have handed him the ball without throwing the ball all game. We still would've...
Maybe LeGarrette Blount liked the ball at that certain weight, you know what I mean?
Maybe when he was just pounding that rock, gripping that rock, he was squeezing some air out of himself.
All 260 pounds of him. All right. You beat AJ and Eifert in the English Trivia Challenge on Fox, right?
Yeah.
Because you knew Slick Rick was actually English.
Yeah.
I got a question for you. Who is Slick Rick?
he's a rapper.
Oh. Look at my friends over here. They're holding their heads like, man, what a dumb question. I didn't know Slick Rick was. I'm of a different generation. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, man. Slick Rick's a rapper. He's talented.
Good?
Yeah.
Can you do some Slick Rick right now?
No, I can't.
Tell us something about you that only your mother would know.
Something about me that only my mother would know.
Yeah.
That's
a good question, isn't it?
That is. I'm glad. I probably can't tell you, because I'm glad she only knows that. Like, it's some things my mom only know about me that we're going to keep that between.
It's kind of a trick question. You know,
yeah, so you got to keep that between me and my mom's.
No, so you're not going to answer that?
I can't.
All right. Do you talk to Geno Atkins? Because we would really love to talk to Geno Atkins.
Geno probably, since I've been here, Geno probably said a total of like 20 words.
20 words. So
that's
we don't have to feel so bad.
No, not at all. Geno's just not a talker. He just goes out there and play ball.
What do you think of the Bengals creamsicle uniforms?
What?
You know, like the white with the orange piping creamsicle look. You know what a creamsicle is?
No.
All right, never mind. What's your perfect day?
My perfect day?
Yeah.
I wake up, have breakfast club, have a good breakfast.
Yeah.
I'm on time to work out.
Yeah.
After I got a workout, I can go home and take me a nap before the kids come home.
Uh-huh.
And I can actually wake up without the kids coming and grabbing me and saying, Daddy, Daddy, let's go outside and play. I can wake up on my own. And then I can go in the backyard and just chill out and watch the kids play.
Very nice. Are you a sunrise kind of guy or sunset kind of guy?
Sunrise.
I'm sunset. White wine or red?
No wine.
You don't drink wine. Do you believe there are aliens in our midst?
Yes. Yes, I strongly believe.
Do you think Rob Gronkowski perhaps is an alien?
I wouldn't be surprised.
Me neither. What about Chris Berman?
Swami. You never know. But with Gronk, I wouldn't be surprised, man. The guy never sleeps, has all the energy in the world.
Yeah.
He's built like a freak. Yeah, so you never know.
He's from somewhere else. Do you play an instrument?
I play drums.
You play drums?
Yeah, I play drums in the church.
Are you good?
Yeah, I'm decent. I haven't played in a while, so I'll say I'm decent. That's cool. I was playing, I was pretty good. They used to always have to type me out trying to add my own little thing at the end. So.
Gotcha. Now, because these guys think it's funny that I don't know who Slick Rick is, what do you think of Flava Flav?
He was a popular rapper.
Yeah.
Public Enemy.
That's right. Back in the day. Yeah. My day.
Slick Rick was back in the day around the same time.
Really? How come was. I never heard of him?
You wasn't listening.
I don't know. I like Public Enemy. I like Flava Flav, though. The big clock and all that.
Yeah. But Slick Rick had the big chains and the clock, all that junk also.
I'll have to check him out.
Oh, man.
Joe. What kind of vehicle do you drive?
I drive a Range Rover.
How would you feel about someone who drove a vehicle had 290,000 miles on it?
Hey, my uncle got a truck.
Yeah.
And it got about 300,000 miles. 300
That's pretty
miles
cool. Yeah. My car has 290,000 miles.
Hey, you keep like rolling.
Damn
keep,
right.
Hey, roll it till the wheels fall off. Ain't nothing wrong with it. It's been lasting this
That's
long.
That's right.
Keep
I haven't
rolling.
Made a car payment in 12 years.
Whew.
That's pretty good, huh?
Yeah, that is great.
It is great.
You know how many guys are die for that?
I see. Even better. Because actually, it's 14 years, not 12. Do you have any questions you would like to ask me?
Are you an alien?
Huh?
Are you an alien?
Am I an alien? You know, my mother doesn't think so, and that's really all that matters, right?
Okay, well,
all right.
There's some things your mom know about you nobody else knows,
that's right? You got anything else?
That'd be all.
All right, that'd be all. Thank you, Joe LaFell, for being on the hot seat.
Let's hear it for Brandon LaFell.
Hello.
Steve, how
Hello.
You doing, Steve?
Hey.
How are you?
How you feeling?
I'm just hanging out.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
How's the body feeling?
Oh, it feels like shit.
Yeah. That's an honest man right there.
Well, it is week 11.
That's an honest man.
No, it's all right. It really does.
Steve, this has been a pretty dynamic rivalry. And you've kind of been in the center of it because you've had some great games against this team. How would you characterize this rivalry with some others that you've been in?
Well, I just think any team in the AFC North, it's just a physical game. There's nothing about it. You know, there's nothing you can really say other than that. When you say the AFC North, you just kind of, it's a physical game. You know, it takes a toll. It's a big game.
Do you think there's a receiver in the league more physical than you?
Oh, yeah, I think there's other guys physical than me.
Like who?
I don't know. You pick a name and I'll tell you I agree with you. I just play ball. You know, I just try to do my deal and kind of go on there. And, you know, I really don't back down for anybody. And, you know, and I understand that whoever I go against, whoever I have to block on that play, they're going to give me their best shot, and I try to give them my best shot.
Do you look forward to playing against Adam Jones?
I like Adam. I've known Adam for a long time. Back in the day, we were Reebok. We shot a commercial out in New Jersey. So I've been knowing him for a long time. It's pretty cool to see how he's, you know, he's been always known for a speed guy. And now as he's gotten older, he's transcended his game. He's been able to be a older guy with technician and really have good technique. So it's been really cool to see him evolve and play hard and just do the things he's been doing. I always have a good interaction with Adam. We go at it. We physical, but it's always a respect. You know, older guys, they understand the respect game. These young guys, these new millennium guys, you know, they don't really get it.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, you've had a couple rookies this season have had harsh
that
things
I've
to
lost,
say about
they,
you.
I've had two rookies that, unfortunately, they have lost all respect for me, so it's been really keeping me up at night, you know. It's just tragic, you know. I've been losing sleep, you know, and with all this, the lack of sleep, you know, I know we lost, but, man, you know, I wasn't, you know, almost able to send my jersey and cleats and gloves all the way to Canton because just the lack of the sleep thing.
I take it that probably says more about those rookies than it says about you.
I could really give a flying.
On the opposite side of that respect, Brandon LaFell can't say enough about you.
Oh, LaFell, that's my guy.
He said in Carolina, you not only from a football standpoint, but he said everything, man. He said you took him under his wing, and you took him under your wing and taught him everything.
See, I'm not as a dirtbag as people say I am.
That's what he said.
Actually, Phil just hit me up the other day. He was having this thing, and so back in Charlotte, he was asking me for the cupcake number because our kids do cupcakes. But Phil's a great guy, man. It's cool. He was with New England, and I saw that game, and they won championship, and I texted him and said congratulations. And turned my phone off, turned off TV, and went to sleep. So it was great to see him. Phil's one of those guys. He's just a great guy, great kid. It's he just had a birthday, so he's 30 years old. So it's actually pretty cool.
He's one of the few guys that I'm sure that is called kid. You can call him kid.
He's just a good dude. JoJo's a great guy, man. He's great family. Just great guy.
On your wildest dreams, did you ever think you'd still be playing at 37?
Nope. Hell, some of y'all didn't even think I'd make it past 4 years, so it happens. I got lucky.
What kept you going all this time?
I don't know. Honestly, some people always ask me. A young guy always asks me. And I would say, luck, some favor from God, and just being at the right place at the right time and some great people around me.
What kind of adjustments have you had to make to stay effective?
I've always kind of tried to take care of my body and eat well. So, I didn't really start feeling my age till about 31, 32. Really start to feel the change. But, I try to take care of my body, try to eat right. I try to go to sleep when I'm supposed to. I get up early. Try to prepare for my day, watching film. I try not to, which is hard, especially as you get older, but I try not to take advantage of the position I am, so I really try not to take any shortcuts.
What do you do best? I mean, during the course of your career, even now, what do you do best that has allowed you to continue to play at such a high level?
I think just being consistent and knowing my weaknesses. And every year you'll have a new habit to break and try to break those habits.
When you went down last year, did you think at that time that might be the end of your career?
Yeah.
I did. What pulled you out of that and going the other direction and being able to, give it one more run?
Well, one, I had a contract, You can't come back when you have no job. So that's always a fact. And then two, I just kind of took my time. I tried to enjoy the family. I didn't try to do a good job of it just because I was injured. It was depressive. Team was losing. There was a lot of things going on. But really, I just kind of tried to take one day at a time. And when I, felt like I tried to get us a try, I had to make my mind up and go at it pretty tough.
When you're on the turf there, is that one of the lowest moments you'd had in your career? Because you are thinking that maybe this is it?
I wouldn't say it's one of the lowest moments, but I know with injuries, anytime you get an injury, you feel like that injury at that moment is the worst thing ever. But I felt pretty bad. One of the things why I was so emotional, and also why I covered my face on getting up, one, I covered my face because, with social media memes, I wasn't going to do that. And also, my kids, at the game. And I know when I go down there wondering and stuff. So I knew it was torn as soon as I did it. So I just kind of wanted to have that moment by myself versus, when you're hurt and all, people always, oh, you'll be back, you're okay. No, I'm not. My ankle's dangling. I'm not going to be okay. So, but I knew immediately. So that's why I was emotional, because I knew exactly what it was.
You and Suggs and other guys come back from big injuries like that. Is it because of the type of people you guys are, or is it the rehab people, or is it a combination? I mean, you guys
that's
have
a combination.
You have a hell of a track record of bringing guys back.
Yeah, it's a combination of guys. You know, me, Suggs, and Joe had the opportunity. You know, we did a lot of rehab together, so we pushed each other. You know, it was with me, Suggs, and well, mainly just me and Suggs. With me and Suggs in the training room, it was a pretty high spirited training room.
I bet.
Ben Watson told me, I think it was you who was right there whenever he tore his Achilles. I mean, that's got to be one of the worst injuries, right? Because you can't walk or do anything for a while, right?
No, you can't do anything. It's pretty terrible. And then they scare you straight, and they tell you, you know, stay off of it because you can re-injure it, and then you got to do the whole process over again. Mm. And I'm like, oh, okay. You know, so it was a few times where I actually fell down the stairs. I was going up the steps in my crutches, and I fell. I got, like, 2 steps from the top, and I fell backwards. But I was holding my leg up the whole time.
Jesus.
And it was brutal. I hit my head, hit my shoulder, but not my leg. Kept my leg up. So it's one of those injuries you don't want to – tearing your Achilles is not one of the injuries – those are one of the injuries that you wouldn't even want to put on your worst enemies because it is a tough injury. With the ACL, you always strengthen. With the Achilles, you have to sit for 2 months. So –
do you see a difference in the Bengals secondary this year? Their numbers are up a little bit. They've had a few changes in there. Hall and Nelson aren't around. Do you see a difference in them?
I don't really look at numbers. I look at schemes. So I don't really see numbers in that way. I don't pay attention to that. I really just look at the schemes, who they're playing, what they're doing, how this guy's playing this technique, you know, technique on the run plays. His safety's running down, you know, so I don't really pay attention to numbers, so I'm not really sure, you know, if I'm a good judge on that.
Do they play? Are they playing differently?
I mean, they're playing the same schemes that they always played. I know it's defense, new defense coordinator, I think, but those guys still playing. You know, Pac-Man's doing his job. He's jamming the guys at the point. You know, 43's doing his. I think what's that, 36? He's coming down hitting people pretty hard. I think they got the young guy, 21, and also Shaw. Those guys are different than Hall. So, you know, just a mixture. And 27, you know, he's a skinny, long, rangy guy. So all that stuff just still factors in. And that's how I kind of look at him and categorize him. I don't really look at any of those other things, to be honest.
LaFell said, another thing he said about you is you were the one that taught him how to watch tape the right way. You know, when did you learn – how to watch tape and break it down the right way, and who was part of that for you?
Well, here's one of the things that's really interesting is, you know, Utah, I'm a Payne alumni for University of Utah. And when I was playing there, we weren't in the Pac-12. We weren't playing USC, Colorado. We were playing Air Force, Wyoming, some of these schools that technically – technique-wise, they were zone coverage. So I learned real early how to read zone coverages and looking at those things. And then when I got to Carolina, you know, I had Patrick Jeffries, I had Ricky Prohl, I had Musa Muhammad. So they taught me how to do that. And then I just started really, you know, just what am I looking at? So I just teach everybody, you know, what are you looking at? And I look at techniques, schemes. If they're running cover two, if I'm in a slot and they're running a cover two, and the wheel linebacker or the Sam linebacker is on my side, how is he jamming? If I have if I have to go near him, is he jamming? Is the end over there? You know, when they do a fire zone, is he coming out? Does he come out flat,
right,
or does he come out with an angle? When I stem inside on the outside, is Pac-Man gonna stem me hard inside and then back off? You know, what technique is the safety when they disguise? Is the safety gonna be far outside the hashes or close to the numbers? You know, all those things that I look at. What is their way of playing the coverage? And so I just break it down like that, and I just watch it over and over. I mean, I could watch a guy, you know, a particular guy. I'll watch him, you know, as the season goes. If we have a playoff game, hopefully, God willing, we have a playoff game, I will watch all of his pass plays for the year, good and bad. Mm-hmm. And I'll just zone in. And sometimes it may be 231 plays. I had nothing but time. This is what I get paid for. This is my job. This is my craft. So I'll watch him. And I like to watch the sequence of the plays just so I can see. You know, a lot of times people may say, oh, this guy's a high head. Well, you have to watch the sequence of the play to understand why he may react it that way. He may react that way because somebody may have stepped on his foot or done something to him. So a lot of times I like to see the sequence versus giving. A scout may give me a synopsis or a summary of who he is, but I'm not going to find that out by word of mouth of someone else. I want to see it for myself.
Right. There's another guy who's a chatty member of the Steve Smith fan club, Darren Simmons. You still keep in touch with Darren?
Oh, man. Darren was my specialties coach.
Right.
He's my specialties coach. It's always good to see him.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's always played punt return, you know. We had a lot of wasted hours in practice discussing things that had nothing to do with football.
Yeah. Is he a pretty good coach? I mean, I know
he's a really good coach. That's why special teams do so well.
Steve, 186 yards, 2 touchdowns last year against the Bengals. You put that in your top 5 games you played or top 10?
No, not really. We lost.
What's the most memorable game then?
Most memorable game. Top for me is when I was at Carolina, my first game, opening kickoff. I took it back, and that was 2 days before my daughter was 2 days after my daughter was born.
Wow!
So
pretty good.
You were telling the fans after you went off against Cincinnati. I think you had caught the 50-yarder. The TV caught you saying some things about the Bengals secondary. Is that just in the heat of the moment? You're just talking a little trash, or?
Man, last year was last year. It's a new year.
Do you feel bad for the kickers last week, Steve?
All the missed
PAs. What kickers?
Are you coming back next year, Steve?
What?
Are you coming back next year?
Man, I'm trying to get through Thanksgiving. You're talking about next year. Black Friday's coming up, man. You got to fight through the crowd.
Hey, thanks a lot for your
time.
Appreciate it. Really appreciate it, man.
Thank you.